All right. Well, I would like to welcome everybody to our December PPS Success Mastery Coaching Call. My name is James Phelps, and in addition to being your host today, I'm the Dean of Education for the PPS Success Mastery Program. Before we get started, I want to let you all know that we do record our coaching calls, and you can find the recordings on our website. They're all located on the audio features page of our Food for Thought section on the site. So I invite you all to visit us there and have a listen to our previous calls or come back in a few days and revisit this call. To begin our call today, Paul is going to talk about information as energy and energy overload. Now, after about 15 minutes or so, we'll open it up for any questions you might have, whether they're about information as energy or anything else. And with all that out of the way, let me turn things over to Paul.
Okay, fantastic. Well, today we're going to talk about information because we're in a very unique time in our in the development of human life, in that the amount of information that we have access to has risen to radically high proportions, and it's not only very high, but it's getting to be more and more of a challenge for people to manage all the information that's available to them now. As a therapist, it's very common for me to find many of my patients under tremendous amounts of stress and even suffering illnesses that are the result of people trying to manage so much information. We have people that are being bombarded, including myself, by email, both personally and professionally, and through targeted marketing campaigns or spam campaigns. People are more than ever on their cell phones. These phones now have web browsers. You can check your email on your cell phone. You can browse the internet on your cell phone. So it's gotten so bad that there's actually, you know, a regular diagnosis for people who have tendonitis of the thumb from typing text messages with their thumb. So it's the same kind of problems we used to see in physical therapy with repetitive stress from using keyboards on computers. We now have people suffering that from using their thumb to type text messages, yet these aren't people that are secretaries. So to type that much on your telephone certainly indicates that there's a tremendous increase in the amount of information transfer in people's lives. We're also in a very unique situation in that 100 years ago, it would be very, very rare for you to find out what was going on in the Middle East or a third world country or something on the other side of the world. That wouldn't have made it to you very fast. You could have lived just outside of San Diego on a farm and had no idea ever what was going on anywhere. You may not even have known the country was at war until someone came and told you. So today, we continue to have the regular mail information. We're blasted with television media. The radio expands, and now we have even got internet radio stations. Children are being inundated with tremendous amounts of information at a very, very early age, which is extremely disruptive to the growth and development of their nervous systems, and many of the people that are adults, young adults today, show the signs of excess stress from their childhood because they were never allowed to let their right brain hemispheres develop normally due to the fact that they were overexposed to information. So I'd like to start the more technical aspects of our talk by making a statement. Information is energy. The fact is that everything that exists in the tangible universe that has any kind of a physical or subtle reality that can be measured or known is one form of energy or another. Each type of energy affects the mind-body systems in one direction or the other, which means in the direction of yin
or the direction of yang. Now, before I go any further, let me give you an example of what I mean. You don't even have to know the energy signal is there. If you look at the research, for example, in the dowsing literature, people that douse water wells like I do, there is a tremendous number of research articles showing that people that live above or sweep above underground streams oftentimes end up with tremendous health problems because of the energy emitted by the water moving under the ground. They don't even know it's there, but it's affecting their body. If you look at the book The Body Electric by Robert O. Becker, he shows how much background electromagnetic pollution there was in the year 1900, and then he shows a chart showing the increases all the way up to, I believe, 1990. And we're experiencing hundreds of times more electromagnetic pollution now than we did in the year 1900, yet our, you know, genetic reality is pretty much identical. Electromagnetic radiation is well known to cause tremendous stress in people's bodies, including stressing the adrenal glands, leading to such problems as chronic fatigue. What I'd like to do now is just make a statement. Information can be loosely broken down into one of two categories: yin, which is female, cooling, receptive, nurturing, moist. And yin is where potential is developed. So the fetus lives in the womb of the mother and grows there. So yin is an anabolic energy. It is a seed energy. It is a potentiating energy, but it only brings any life form to a certain point before a more dominant, expressive male yang energy must supersede in order to create movement. So yin energies are what I call love-based, integrative, and a yin-based energy typically moves someone into the right brain hemisphere, and the ideas behind the yin-based energy systems are typically holistic. They're more integrative. Yang energies are often fear-based energies. They're reductionist, and they move people away from the whole. So your typical Western scientific approach to everything is to break it down into its microscopic pieces and try to figure it out. But as we can see from our current medical dilemma worldwide, as we've isolated more and more, we've lost touch of the whole. This is where the definition of a specialist comes from. A specialist is someone who knows more and more about less and less until they know absolutely everything about nothing. So what you have is yang-based, reductionist, or isolationist information that moves you away from whole or holism, which can be good in certain situations. For example, if a topic is too large to study or to understand in its integrity, such as the human life, then it must be reduced and the study must be focused on such things as the hormonal system, psychological health, physical health, emotional health, mental health, etc. And then it must be rebuilt. So you see a constant cycling between yin and yang energies throughout the universe, and that's exactly how the entire universe is moved. Once you understand these principles, it becomes easy for me as a therapist or a teacher to identify who's on information overload. And it's important to realize that information overload, I'm getting a reverberation there, James, but I'll keep going. Information overload is essentially no different than being overloaded with caffeine or being overloaded with any given drug. When people get on information overload, they literally act as though they've drank 4 or 5 cups of coffee or eaten too much sugar. Yet unlike the other molecules, which actually carry energy that you can see a teaspoon of sugar, you can see honey, you can see cereal, You don't see the information. When someone's talking to you, you don't see their voice, you hear it. When you're reading, you don't see the information transfer, but it's there because you're taking symbols in and attaching a psychic reality to them, which shows up as on a PET scan as brain activity, which means there's an energy exchange taking place. So what you see when people bring in too much information is they actually behave, function, and look just like someone that's overtraining in athletics. And they get potentially fatigued and then chronically fatigued. Which brings us to a very important definition. The word information actually means in formation. What that means is that the purpose of information is to actually improve the synergy or the harmony or the alignment of our thoughts, our words, and our deeds in order to become more productive, more fruitful, and to evolve as a species. To the degree that the information you bring into your life does not create wholeness, in other words, to the degree that you cannot keep the information in formation, you develop chaos. The reason they teach soldiers to march in formation is because the soldiers are much more efficient. It teaches teamwork. And you can get more energy out of a system that's working in harmony than you can in any system that's in a state of disharmony. So one of the first things I'd like to say to the listeners is that if in your life right now you're in a situation where you feel stress at the thought of going and taking some class or attending your CPR certification or reading the newspaper or whatever it might be, chances are very good you're being given a message from your body that you need to cut down on the amount of information in your life. Now, many people, when I ask them how they can cut down on the information in their life, they tell me they can't do it. And I say, why not? Well, just because everything that's in my life is critical. You know, I don't have any unnecessary information. So I ask them, well, when's the last time you went on vacation? Oh, a couple months ago. Where'd you go? You know, well, the point is, very frequently I make this point, and that is that they didn't check their email for a week because they're in Fiji. They didn't have any email contact, or they were in Jamaica or somewhere. So it's really us learning to manage ourselves more effectively and getting clear on what information we want and don't want. For example, I have my assistant screen all my mail because I literally get boxes of mail sometimes. The amount of time it takes for me to open every envelope and every package that comes to me could literally some days be a half an hour or more. I value my time at $500 an hour. So if I spent half an hour opening mail, that's $250 worth of time that I could have been writing someone a program, writing a new article or a book or something along those lines. Having a spam filter or having an assistant check your email or changing your email address on occasion and only giving the email address out to people that you want to hear from can be a very, very big reduction in the amount of energy that you spend. And I can give you a classic example. I was on vacation with my wife. She hadn't checked her email in like 3 days. We went to a little coffee shop. We were in Crestone, Colorado, one little place in town that had wireless internet. She opened up her email and she had over 1,000 emails in 3 days. Now the look on her face was like somebody was, just about to, stick her in the foot with a nail or something. She was not real happy about that, and I saw how quickly the energy just drained out of her body because even to hit the delete button 1,000 times can take 30-40 minutes. So to conclude this little discussion, I'll just reiterate that all information is a form of energy. All information is either integrative or disintegrative in your body, in your emotional field, in your mental field, and therefore in your life. You can classify information as yin, integrative, holistic, or love-based, and yang, fear-based, reductionist, or moving away from the whole. The word information means information, and to the degree that you can keep the information or working harmoniously for you, information serves you and actually aids in your life and in your health and your performance. And to balance yourself, it's important to either decide on your own accord or have someone like a pet practitioner or a doctor or a therapist help you make this decision. But we all teeter-totter back and forth between yin dominance and yang dominance. For example, when you're asleep at night, you're in a state of yin. When you're up mowing the grass, you're in a state of yang. So to the degree that a person's adrenal glands are fatigued, they have a yang excess. And to the degree that you have a yang excess, you have a yin deficiency. The most common problem I see worldwide in my patients is a yang excess, which is the hallmark of which is inflammation in the body, heat, pain, redness, swelling, fatigue, anxiety, being in a rush, etc. Very rarely do I see a yin excess. A yin excess might be represented by the term couch potato. Once you know what state you're in, then you know what type of energy or information you need to bring wholeness into your life. If you're in a yang excess, you need a serious information filtering process, which means you need to get your core values very clear, as I show in lesson one, and you only acknowledge or utilize information that is in alignment with your core values and your core objective and your immediate goals. If you're in a state of yin dominance, which might be someone coming out of college who now wants to go off and start a career, so they've got their four-year degree, but maybe they get a job with a corporation and they need to be trained. There's someone who's in a yin dominant stage. So they're in the fetal development stage. They're taking on a new job, maybe as an operator for, you know, Bell South, or as a medical assistant or a dental hygienist. And they're in the budding stage of their career, which is yin, like the fetus growing. So those people need more information, but those people can easily become distracted by too much email, too many cell phone calls, too many distractions, too many websites, too much YouTube, too much of this, too much of that, so that when the real information comes, they don't have the energy or the capacity to integrate it and use it effectively. So the key thing is get really clear on whether you need to expand yourself and grow yourself, which means you need integrative information, or whether you need to rest yourself, which means you need to diminish reductionist or destructive information in your life. If you have questions or problems with regard to how to determine what you need, I would highly recommend you go to the Czech Institute website and find a Czech practitioner near you that can do an assessment, or book an appointment with one of the PPS Success Mastery mentors, which can be found on the website, and they can help you identify what type of changes you need to make in your life so that you can more effectively channel information and energy to create what you want. I'd be happy to take any questions now.
And if you have a question and you happen to have muted your line, you can unmute your line at any point by pressing any button on your keypad.
No questions at all?
And, of course, you know, your questions don't have to be about today's topic. If you have any questions that you think Paul might be able to help you out with, please do hop in the conversation and ask your question. Hmm. Well, I actually have a question, Paul. Maybe this will stimulate some conversation. But you said it's very common for people to have a yang overload, sort of too much of this information, and therefore too much energy. And I wonder if one way to kind of alleviate that energy might be some basic kind of qigong or other kinds of meditative exercises like that.
Yeah, those things do really help. The problem is that, let's just say you're that person I described who maybe just came out of college, you're getting a new job, and you're just inundated with information. Mm-hmm. Doing any kind of a yin qi cultivating practice or any sort of a yin activity will help counterbalance the stress.
Mm-hmm.
It's important to remember that at the biochemical level, the body cannot differentiate a physical stress from an emotional stress, from a mental stress, from a spiritual stress, from a biochemical stress. Your nervous system doesn't care whether you drop a hammer on your foot, go through a divorce, go through a bankruptcy, or win the lottery. Whatever is interpreted as stress produces a stress response in the body at the biochemical level. Going out and doing Tai Chi and Qigong will shift the system towards yin. The question then becomes, how much qigong does it take to counterbalance the information overload that you're suffering? So if you give it a number and you say, well, I can do 15 minutes of Tai Chi in the morning, it's going to cultivate a certain level of yin energy. It's going to give you a sense of stability. It's going to give you some doctor quiet. It's going to give you a sense of self-nurture. And it's actually going to build a foundation for you. It's a stabilizing force. Because there's nothing, essentially, if you break the human life down or the entire universe down to its essential elements, there's nothing but yin and yang. So if you have a yang excess from information, from exercise, from pathological relationships, from faulty food, whatever, if you quantify that, so let's just say somebody's got out of a scale of 1 to 10, they have a yang excess. If 5 is halfway between yin and yang, and someone comes in at 8.5, well, then doing Tai Chi, Qigong, yoga, sleeping, time to yourself, getting a massage, eating properly, drinking enough water, all of these essentially mount a yin counterbalance. So the question really becomes, how much yin energy do you need, and which forms of yin energy are the most nurturing? For example, if I said, well, you need to get a massage a week, that might be very helpful. But if you don't like massage therapy because maybe you were sexually abused as a child and you don't like touching you, then that's actually going to create more of a yang energy in your body. If you don't like exercising and I ask you to do, you know, Tai Chi, then every time you go to do your Tai Chi, you dread doing the Tai Chi. So the real secret is quantifying how much of a yin input you need, and then determining which type of yin input you can bring in the least amount of stress to your psyche as a means of supporting your physiology. When you identify those two, then the next thing you have to do is have the discipline to make the change. And as Brad Sugar says, when the desire for change is greater than the resistance to change, change happens. And I bring this point up because many of my patients tell me how badly they want to change, and they are willing to pay me $500 an hour to engineer a change program, but it's not unusual for them to go home, do the program for 2 or 3 weeks, and then as soon as they start feeling better, stop doing the program. Or sometimes they don't do but, you know, 25% of the program because they are into a habit. Developed a habit of living a certain way, and that habit, if it is destructive, is now called an addiction.
And many people today are, unfortunately, addicted to information. They're addicted to checking email, addicted to talking on the cell phone, addicted to surfing the Internet, addicted to watching television, so all that. So once we get the once we identify how much stress they're under, once we identify which form of energy they need and which vehicle we can use to get it to them, the next thing we've got to do is work on behavior modification, or the plan can fail.
Before we move on, do we have any other anybody on the line who has a question for Paul? And remember, again, it doesn't have to be regarding information as energy, but anything you think that Paul might be able to help you with.
Paul?
Yes. Yes.
All right. I was wondering if you'd answer my question.
What's your name?
My name's Dan.
Dan, okay, Dan, go for it.
Cheers, Paul. I'd like to know what you'd do if you was me in my situation. I've been trying to set my business for a bit, and I've just had a block about it, and I've been trying to work through that, and I came to PPS in the UK in October, and a lot of things changed, and I've been watching the DVDs, and I've, you know, kind of been trying to work things out, and I've come to the point where I'm starting to work through it, and I'm starting to get some momentum, and I've been, you know, putting some effort into it, and, you know, doing things, but I've waited so long, I've basically made myself skint. So I'm obviously trying to get a job, but I'm also trying to follow my passion. I'm kind of in a bit of a, it's kind of like, what do I do now? How do I get a business started without much money? Or, you know, do I go get a job and do something that I maybe don't want to do and get the money and then start doing what I want to do? Or do I find a way to do what I want to do without the money?
What do you want to do?
Well, what I want to do is I want to use, you know, my qualifications that I've got to help other people. You know, I mean, I've learned a lot about, you know, how to get out of it, and I've learned a lot of things about the body that I'd like to help other people on their path get to where they'd like to be. And I've had a few ideas, like, recently, which I've started pursuing and started going after, because before I was just kind of scared to do it. And I've started to move past that now, and I've started to get things to work, and I'm setting up a website at the moment, but I'm just really not sure what to do, because I've just, as I say, like, I've just gone and put a CV in at the gym today. I'm not asking for jobs, I'm just trying to create an opportunity, create an opening, but I've just, as I say, I'm not really sure how to go about it, because and as I say, I don't have a formal job, and I don't have any money left.
Well, you don't need any money to make money in the line of work that you're in. What you need is people that need help.
Yeah.
And they've already got the money. And really, what you know, if you're doing holistic lifestyle coaching type work,
yeah,
how hard is it to go to somebody's house and go through their cupboards with them and teach them how to shop, show them where gluten's showing up in their food, showing them what processed foods are. You know, I'm just using this as an example. There's, you know, aside from the paper that you need to do your assessment, you don't even need an office. All you need to do is go to them. You can go out, go to corporations. You can go to doctors and tell the doctor what your service is. You can go to therapists. You can go to other personal trainers. There, you know, you just have to become proactive. The way I built my business when I was a young man out of the military is I went to doctors, to physical therapists, to chiropractors, to osteopaths, to everyone in the medical community, and I said, give me the toughest patients you got, and you got nothing to lose. If I don't help them, you didn't lose anything, but if I do help them, you got a happy customer.
Yeah.
And I built my entire business on medical failures that nobody knew what to do with. And that didn't require much of anything. You know, I used to drive around in my car and meet with people. People would come to my apartment. I would do my stretching and my exercises with dowel rods, Swiss balls, and a foam roller. And
I would do the soft tissue right there on my table, but you know, my overhead was almost nothing. So you don't need to have a big overhead. You don't need to go out and round up piles of money. What you need to do is sell what you've got. And really what you've got is enough information to help pretty much anybody in your town. You just have to find ways of letting people know about your service so that they know what's available. You know, you can't just sit on a park bench reading a newspaper and hope someone's going to come tap you on the shoulder and say, would you come teach me how to eat? Because they don't know whether you're a rocket scientist, a garbage collector, or a high school dropout.
Yeah.
Put your time and energy into making connections. Go to meetings where you can do networking. Get a few pennies together doing whatever you can, even if you have to go mow some lawns or do some landscaping work, whatever, and get clear on what it is that you want to offer people that you can offer them without having a special office or a bunch of equipment, such as HLC stuff. I mean, a simple example, if you just took my book, How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy, and used that as your operating manual, and went around and just taught people how to apply that information in their life, then what else would you need but a book? Sell them the book. Buy a case of books at wholesale. Sell them the book at retail. You're making money right there. And then sell your time by your hourly rate. You can easily design an exercise program for someone. Most people need very simple exercise programs. You know, I tell my students in the golf biomechanics courses, if you give me a Swiss ball, a mat, and a stick, I can make $500,000 a year with nothing else. And literally, if you take a stick, a Swiss ball, a mat, a pad of paper, and a case of How to Eat, Move, and Be Healthy books, and go to golf courses, go to sports clubs, you know, you just have to believe in yourself, and you got to be passionate about it, and you got to be the change that they want to see. You got to look and feel the way they want to look and feel, and then your product is yourself. So it's very, very easy. I would be very careful if I was you to not fall into the trap of thinking that you need to borrow money and get yourself into a financial crunch where you're owing money but haven't got an income stream. Use that pressure of not having an income stream as motivation to get out there.
Yeah, that's part of kind of what I was trying to ask. It's like I feel like I know that I'm partly sabotaging myself, and I have to sort of really fight with myself to do it. And I know you've said about the man viruses, and I've kind of tried to find out why it is that I kind of sabotage myself. And at the moment, all I can do is fight with myself in a way, which obviously I try not to do, because obviously when you fight, there's a loser. But I kind of find myself, you know, being tired and I shouldn't be, or when I go out to do it, I put it off. So now it is kind of like I have to sit myself down, force myself to do it. But I wish I'd just sort of, you know, I wish it came easy in a way. I wish I didn't have that, you know, inner conflict about it.
It will become easy if you wait long enough.
Yeah.
When you're so hungry, you got to go look at a garbage can for dinner. You'll be motivated.
That is how it's turning. It's like I realize I'm either going to have to do it, or I'm going to be ending up doing a job I really don't want to do. So it's kind of like that's kind of what's driving me at the moment.
Bob Proctor says there's only one difference between successful people and unsuccessful people. And that is that successful people are willing to do the things to be successful that unsuccessful people are not willing to do. And you're facing that very issue right now.
Yeah.
People suffer fear of success because the grand majority of our society is financially unsuccessful. 98% of the world's wealth is owned by 2% of the population. So another statistic that's very clear is 95 to 98% of the U.S. population, and that statistic works fairly accurately in most industrialized nations, are one paycheck from bankruptcy. So what you've got is an entire industrialized society that is spending more money than it makes
So the people that are around you that look like they have money actually probably have no more money than you. They just have more credit cards than you. The secret is know that you're going to spend time and energy doing something. So I'm going to share something with you that I'd like you to remember. If you're not working to accomplish your own goals, you're working for your boss, and that means you're working to accomplish your boss's goals. So if you go get a job somewhere, then automatically you now become a force that helps someone else achieve their goals. If the job that you get is in line with your core values, so say you could go get a job at a corporation teaching holistic lifestyle coaching, now you have synergy. Now you've done what's called aligning interests. So your interest is in teaching holistic health, and their interest might be having a bunch of healthy employees, which is another way for you to go. You can go to corporations that have, you know, executives and large numbers of employees. Corporations like Intel or Boeing or any of the large corporations that has an investment in their employees, and many of these corporations often do and are willing to bring in health experts to teach their employees how to be healthy. Some of them will even hire you full time. I've got several Czech practitioners that work for large corporations as health and fitness counselors, and that's all they do, is work with the employees of a given company. The key thing, though, is just spend some time each morning with yourself and just ask yourself, who am I becoming today? What do I want to become? Who do I want to work for? What's my idea of success? What makes me happy? When you know what your idea of success is, and you know what makes you happy, then you have your compass bearings. Anybody that has their compass bearings but gets lost anyhow isn't that committed to arriving at the destination that they've chosen as their compass bearings. That's a pathology that almost always emanates from our childhood and parents that were scattered all over the place and taught us how to be non-achievers instead of achievers, which unfortunately is a large percentage of the population. To the degree that you can recognize this internal blockage to success or happiness, you have a choice to make. And remember, the difference between successful people and unsuccessful people is that successful people do what it takes to be successful. If you've identified that you procrastinate, then ask yourself what the benefit of procrastination is. What are you really getting out of it? Where is it taking you, and how much is it making you a year? There's really, there's no pill you can take. There's no formula other than getting clear on what your core values are, clear on what your objectives are, clear on what your idea of success is, clear on what your idea of happiness is. Once you know where that is, you know your destination. All you got to do is connect the point that you're at in your life with the point that you want to be at in 1 month, 6 months, a year, 3 years, and 5 years, and then you just draw the roadmap. And as I show in PPS Success Mastery Lesson 1, once you know your core values and you know what direction you're trying to go to achieve your legacy, then you also know what becomes a distraction. You know clearly which social interactions are distractions. You know which religious interactions are distractions. You know how much exercise is enough and how much is a distraction. You can go right through your entire life and see where your habits for parasiting your time and energy are and where you need to, you know, change that habit. No one's going to do that for you. It's something that you have to have the discipline to do, just like I have to have the discipline to, you know, do my work.
Does that make sense? That's great, yeah.
What are you going to do about it?
I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to have to spend some time each morning, like a couple of hours, just going around, meeting people, talking to people, showing them what I've got to offer, and, you know, seeing if I can make some relationships with some businesses or some trainers or, you know, people around, and see what other options, you know, as you mentioned, like businesses, or just see what's around me and start trying to get, you know, reach out to that.
Remember, the big areas for this type of work now are body shape transformation, because we have more people that suffer obesity than ever in the history of man in any country. So anytime you can offer solutions for changing people's body shape, you're going to have a winner. Two, the number one reason for visits to a doctor these days is fatigue. So anything you can do to improve energy and vitality is going to get people's attention. And then four, the most common orthopedic problem is low back pain. So to the degree that you can offer solutions for low back pain, you've got another market. So those are your three big markets right there. I would recommend that you focus your time, energy, and efforts by going to groups or to people that have one or more of those problems as a real situation that you can provide solutions for. When you go to large corporations, they're always concerned about productivity. Things like, if you can reduce the number of days that employees lose to sickness, you will be helping the employer a tremendous amount. So they always want to reduce days lost to sickness. You understand that?
Yeah, completely understand it. Yeah, that's great.
That's how it works.
Yeah. In fact, I know someone who's done that, so it'd be good to get talk with them and have a talk with some of the other big businesses that are doing that sort of thing and see what there is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just remember you got to be a chameleon, right? If you're going to go to a large corporation, you don't want to show up at a large corporation looking like you're dressed for a workout with a bunch of rugby players. If you're going to go do a consultation with a bunch of rugby players, don't show up with a suit and a tie.
I hear you.
Right? If you want to talk to a rugby player, then it's shit, piss, and fuck. If you're going to talk to a businessman, then speak accordingly. Otherwise, you can lose the opportunity. You've got to be like a chameleon, which means you've got to fit into the right environment. When in Rome, be a Roman.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, cheers for that.
You're welcome. Are there any other questions?
How can, Paul, I'd like to ask a question. My name is Heather.
Hi, Heather.
Hi. How can you identify people in your life that are keeping you back from attaining your goals?
Well, the first way you can identify them is whenever you're around them, it makes you tired.
Okay.
So it's draining to be around them. And if it's draining to be around somebody, the first thing that you should start asking is, what is it about this person that's draining me? And the other thing is that they're typically not synergistic with you. So you find yourself defending yourself or shirking off criticism, those types of things. You know, whenever you're interests are aligned with the people around you, you get flow. So it's kind of like body surfing. If you're swimming and you set yourself up just right so that the wave is cresting underneath you, it gives you a great big surge of energy and pushes you forward. But once you land on shore to get back out there to catch the next wave, as you probably are well aware, you got to swim against the waves, and it's very tiring and very demanding. And if the waves are big enough to ride and have fun on, that means they're going to be hard to work your way back through. So in our relationships, when you're with the people that are synergistic with you, you always feel like you're catching a wave. So you meet them at a coffee shop, and you have a sense of expansion, of elation. The word relationship means re-elationship, which means when you're in a good relationship with someone, personally, professionally, or spiritually, anytime you're going to spend time with them, you feel elated, you feel lighter, you feel more whole, you feel supported, you feel like you get to share. But anytime you're in a relationship that's essentially taking you away from your objective, it is compressive, it's tiring. It requires that you actually work to contain yourself. For example, if somebody just runs on and talks too much and doesn't get to the point, it can be hard not to be rude to somebody like that and say, Tom, what's the point? You know, or whatever. So if you find yourself feeling stressed or diminished or broken down or drugged down in the presence of another person, then the first thing you should do is get clear on why you're with that person. What does the relationship offer you? What does your relationship offer them? And what are you getting for a return on your time and energy invested? And what are they getting for their time and energy invested? The only way you can ever truly do that is to complete lesson one in the mastery program, which helps you get very clear on your core values. Because until you identify what your own core values are, you can never identify whether somebody's synergistic or antagonistic to your own individual modus operandi. In other words, your reason for being.
Mm-hmm.
Like if my core values are Christian ethics and yours are atheist, then every time we get together and I start talking about Jesus Christ, this is going to drive you crazy. Jesus this, Jesus that. Jesus is coming, the second coming of Christ. You know, that can just really wear an atheist right out. So there you see a misalignment in core values. And this is why people congregate with people of like mind, because speaking of it in terms of physics, you have two types of energy or waves. Constructive or destructive. So if you have constructive interference, that means when you come into someone else's presence, their energy adds to yours and makes you a bigger, stronger wave, which gives you more work potential, more potential to change and get things done, which means to evolve. But every time you come into the presence of someone who's antagonizing you, it's destructive interference. So the engagement with that person actually sucks energy out of you and moves you potentially away from your objective. The benefit can be that destructive interference can be an energy that redirects you. So driving your car down the road to go pick your daughter up from school is constructive, but if a dog runs out in front of you and you end up in the ditch, that's destructive interference. Because the ditch slows you down and resists your movement towards your objective. So anybody that comes into your life will show you fairly quickly whether they're constructive or destructive, but you cannot determine constructive or destructive interference until you yourself are clear, as I just told the previous questioner. As I said, until you know your core values, you can't determine what your compass bearings are. And if you don't know your compass bearings, you don't know whether the person that you're with is moving you in the direction of your bearings or away from it, because you don't have any bearings. Unfortunately, that's most people. Most people are in multiple social relationships that they often quantify as draining. And I ask them, well, why do you continue to do that? And oftentimes the answer is, I don't know, because it's a habit. You see, until somebody becomes brave enough to become their own best friend and to work through their own garbage, then they sort of seek refuge in other people's garbage and other people's life. Once you get clear on who you are, what you are, and where you're going, it becomes glaringly obvious within minutes, usually, as to whether or not a relationship with anybody is going to be supportive or destructive to your own objective. Does that help?
Yes, it does. It's actually a very close relationship, and so it does make it difficult because it's an internal struggle, and there are always those moral and core values that come into play that perhaps you're letting those around you down by ending the relationship. So
this sounds like a spousal relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. So let me spend a couple of minutes with you and give you a little love. Tell me your first name again.
Heather.
Heather. Okay. I can feel right now that you're in a challenging position.
Yeah.
Okay. But I'm going to share something with you because you're talking to a man who's already been through all this stuff. I was married to my wife for 17 years, and her core values became different enough to mine that as challenging as it was to get a divorce, and at the time my son was 14, I knew that if I went one step further, I was only reinforcing for my son how to live a pathological relationship. To the degree that you must sacrifice your truth and your honesty, you don't have a relationship. We are all here to help each other evolve. We are all here to help each other learn to cultivate more goodness, more beauty, and more truth. Once you identify that the relationship is not effectively serving you and that you are being held back, at the moment you become honest about your direction and about what you need to reach your potential as a human being, at that moment you've also identified how to teach everybody else around you how to be honest, how to be good, how to be truthful, and how to move forward. Remember the old saying, misery loves company. Most people have learned from their culture, their society, and their family how to drag other people into their problems and into their challenges. Very few people are brave enough to actually be honest enough with a spouse or a family about what their true needs are. And then if the person on the other end, such as the husband or the wife, is in conflict, then the immediate thing they do is begin to use judgment, blame, guilt, and shame as tools of leverage. But remember, nobody can judge, blame, guilt, or shame you unless you allow them to. Right? If you were in my position and saw how many beautiful letters I get in the mail, you'd think that's fantastic. But then when I hand you some of the ugly ones that come from people accusing me of all sorts of things, then you could see that if I allowed that to become true for me, then it could really be hard for me to do my job and be honest with people. You know, I've had many letters in the mail from, evangelical Christians and people that are trying to save me from hell because of hearing me give a talk somewhere. And the reality of it is I always have a decision to make just like you do. Which one of us is lost? Well, I know that I'm not lost. I'm 100% sure of that because I'm responsible for myself. To be healthy means to take responsibility for yourself. To be spiritual means to accept responsibility for what you create moment to moment. So when you get clear on who you are and what your core values are, to the degree that that moves you away from your spouse or from your family members, you've got a decision to make. The decision is this. If the direction you're going in truly makes you happy inside and liberates you, then, in my opinion, you're obligated to do that because so few people in the world are brave enough to be happy and brave enough to be whole because nobody else is doing it, that it holds society back. Abraham Lincoln made a beautiful statement one time. He said, the best way to help the poor is not to become one of them. And many Christians reacted to that by saying, oh, how unfair, and that's not respectful, and that's not loving. But they totally missed the point. The point that he was making was is they don't need company, they need leadership. So to the degree that people are personally, professionally, and spiritually poor or stuck or dogmatic, yet you lower your values and your standards and your dreams to avoid their criticism, then you've just become stuck with them. And that's called a codependent relationship. The thing that I would warn you against is not to come to the point in your life where you only identify yourself as successful or happy if you can get someone else to change to be like you. In other words, if your husband has different religious ethics or work ethics or moral ethics or sexual ethics or relationship ethics than you do, but you really think he's a cool guy and you can just let him be that way and enjoy yourself with him and enjoy a little debate with him now and then you can still have a fantastic relationship. Like, my wife doesn't practice the same spiritual practices that I do. There's many things that she just isn't into, but we're best friends. So I just love Penny because she's Penny. I don't go to Penny and say, listen, you know, I'm going to go do a meditation out in the mountains, and I want you to come with me. And if you don't come with me, then, you know, you're a spiritual misfit, blah, blah, blah. I just say, this is what I'm going to do. Would you like to join me? If she doesn't want to join me, cool, off I go. You know, the reason I say this to you is because I don't want you to get the impression that I'm suggesting that the only way you can ever achieve wholeness and health and well-being once you identify your core values and the direction that you want to go is to leave your family members behind just because they don't agree.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, can you become the person you want to become out of love for yourself and respect for yourself, and at the same time respect that they too have opinions and they too have fears, but be brave enough to let them own those as their very own? If you can live happily with your husband and with whoever is with you or may be challenging you and be brave enough to let them own their own opinions and not let them get under your skin, to the degree that you enjoy those people and to the degree that you can share with them and not get drugged down by them, then you're not in a codependent relationship, and there you have the equivalent of the poor watching mom get rich or watching wife get rich. It doesn't take very long for a husband to show his wife or a wife to show his husband what it looks like and what it feels like to become happy. And to the degree that you can show someone what happiness looks like and what truth looks like and what good and what beauty and what flow and what joy looks like without making them feel like they're being strong-armed into doing that, they almost always follow suit. It is the nature of human beings to watch first and do second. But it's a mistake to think that you've got to disengage yourself from someone who disagrees with you so you can go off and become happy. Because what can happen is you can actually disengage from someone who really loves you and who you really love, but over seemingly minor differences, lose the relationship. And the worst mistake in the world is to think that you've got to change your husband because your ideals are different than his, and the worst mistake he can make is to think he's got to change you because your ideals are different than his, because then you don't have friendship. What you have there is a self-indulgent sense of ownership. And most people that are in relationships together, unfortunately, think they own the other person, my wife, my husband. To the degree that you hold possession in your consciousness, then you run into a lot of conflict because most people try to change the person in the relationship to be what they want without considering what the person that they're trying to change really wants. My strongest suggestion would be for you and your husband both to do lesson one together and identify your individual core values and then sit down together and do a core values map as a partnership and see how much of a difference there is between your wants, needs, desires, and direction. If it looks like you can run parallel towards happiness, joy, love, and completeness, and yet be in somewhat different veins. In other words, maybe he sticks with his religious ideals and you stick with yours and you agree to just enjoy the differences in each other, then you have a relationship. But to the degree that it's obvious that you cannot reconcile your direction and core values with his direction and core values, then you've got a real serious decision to make, because to the degree that you cannot reconcile your differences and create harmony between the two of you, every single person around you, family, friends, parents, uncles, aunts, cousins, kids, neighbors, everyone around you is learning how to live a codependent pathological relationship. Now, the problem with that is you'll fit in perfectly in society, because that's what about 98% of the population is doing. The sad part of it is you'll get more sad and more unhappy every year, and you'll find out why cancer is so prevalent today.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason cancer is so prevalent today is because it's a socially acceptable way out of a fucked up relationship.
Well, thank you for that. And I definitely have some more thinking to do, but you make it sound very clear. I guess one of my concerns is that in a lot of relationships, some people are waiting for their partner to fulfill them, and I would like to fulfill myself.
Well, you should fulfill yourself, because, you see, here's the problem. If someone's waiting for you to fulfill them and you do, what have you just created?
Not a synergistic relationship.
Oh, you've just got yourself a child,
mm-hmm.
Right? So how many breaths have you got?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right? You can have a husband on one breast. You can have a boss on another breast. You can have a garbage collector on another breast. You can just become everybody's nipple. And that gets to be real tiring,
mm-hmm.
Right? And the sad part of it is nobody learns how to take responsibility for their own happiness. Nobody learns how to take responsibility for their own life. And people that get their sense of self-worth by being everybody else's joy or being everyone else's perfect mom or perfect wife or perfect lover, even though they're dreading it, ends up losing themselves. And every time they administer what should be an act of love and kindness, it causes passive-aggressive tendencies in them because they're angry on the inside. But to the degree that they're honest with the people in their relationships and it moves them in another direction, then the infant cries for the tit. Now, there's a weaning process that has to go on here. And the weaning process happens right when you start doing your core values together, because you make it clear. This is how much time I'm willing to spend with you. This is what makes me feel loved by you. For example, have you ever asked your husband what it is that you do that makes him feel loved? And does he know what it is that you expect from him that makes you feel loved?
That's not something we have discussed by any means, no.
Okay, so look how tricky things are already.
Mm-hmm.
You see, how do you know when you're doing something that makes him feel loved? And how do you know if what you're doing that you think makes him feel loved isn't just a royal irritation and vice versa?
Mm-hmm.
So until you're really clear, you sit down and say, what is it that I do for you that makes you feel loved? You have no idea whether or not all the things that you are doing are making him feel loved. And I'll give you a classic, painful example from my relationship with my first wife. When we were going through relationship counseling after 17 years of marriage and the bottom was about to fall out, the counselor said, Paul, what do you do to make Sue feel loved? And I said, I make love to her. I give her orgasms. I make love to her passionately. There's nothing she can ask me to do that I won't do for her sexually. And so the counselor, you know, didn't even flinch. She just wrote that down. And she said, Sue, what is it that you do to make Paul feel loved? And I thought for sure she was going to say, oh, I make love to him. You know what she said? She said, I cook for him, I clean for him, and I take care of his son. So she said, do you feel love when you're having sex? She says, no, I feel like I'm servicing my husband. And I said, why is that? How could you say that? She said, because you don't spend any time with me and your son. All you do is work all the time. You get up in the morning, you exercise, you eat breakfast, you go to work, you come home at 9 o'clock at night, you go in your bedroom, you close the door, and you start writing articles and doing research and developing seminars, and you're never really there. So, you know, when I make love to you, I feel like all I'm doing is supporting a workaholic's pathology. And, you know, I said, my God, don't you realize I'm going to work to make money to achieve a standard of living that's what I've dreamed of and what I have always been under the impression that you wanted. So the point is, it took me till 17 years into a relationship to find out that the very woman who I thought I was making love to felt essentially as though she was just giving me a massage every couple of days, like a massage therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't rewarded at all by that. Now, the thing that was perplexing to me is we were having great sex. She was having great orgasms. And I thought, well, how in the world could a woman later have orgasms and feel that way? But you see, it was no different than petting a dog, and the dog starts moving his little leg and grunting and groaning. And just because you think he's moving his leg, smiling, that's what the dog wants. And essentially what I'm saying is, when you pet a dog, it's a reflex reaction to behave that way. And when you pet a vagina, it's a reflex reaction to have an orgasm if you pet it long enough or do it right. But that doesn't mean the person's in love with you. It doesn't mean the person's happy. It means that there is a physiological reaction to a given stimulus, and if you make the assumption that I did, that means everything's okay, you can be brutally wrong.
Well, I appreciate your being so candid.
Well, you know, there's no other way to be,
no,
right?
No, not at all. No,
to the degree that you sugarcoat things or, you know, beat around the bush, nobody comes out the winner.
No.
That's just Chinese fire drill.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we all grow to a point in our maturity where we're done with silliness.
Mm-hmm.
We're done being polite to the detriment of everybody else and ourselves. There comes a time when you have to just really be honest about who you are and about what you need. And only when you're honest about who you are and what you need can you determine whether or not you can be honest about who you are and what you need with someone else. Just the old saying, to thine own self be true, or thou canst be true to any other man. And that's just a fact.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very, very much. I appreciate it.
This is why Osho says, you're not alive, you're not free till you're carving your own path in the jungle. I'm sure you'll do fine. If you haven't done lesson one, I would highly recommend you really get your nose in there and clearly define your core values so that when you sit down, you can say to somebody exactly what it is that you're wanting, feeling, and needing. It might also be a good idea for you to read Marshall Rosenberg's book, Nonviolent Communication, because it gives you the tools to begin discussing what you need with any other person without creating an inflammatory situation.
Okay. Well, what was his name?
Marshall Rosenberg, and the book is Nonviolent Communication.
Okay.
Also, my mother is a counselor that works and is a nonviolent communication counselor, and she does relationship and marriage counseling using the techniques of nonviolent communication. So if you get to the point where you've done lesson one, you have your core values, and you feel you need some support to have a discussion with your husband, and you need a professional mediator that knows how to channel a conversation so that it doesn't create a battle or create the opposite of what you're after, then you can hire my mother by the hour to do that kind of intermediary work, and she's an expert at nonviolent communication, so she knows how to keep these things flowing effectively and smoothly, and you can find her on the PPS website in the mentor section.
Okay.
Her name's Mira Sensor, C-E-N-S-O-R. And her husband's also a counselor as well. He's Alex Sensor.
Okay.
It depends whether you prefer a male or a female.
Okay. Okay. Well, thank you very much for that information.
You're very welcome. And thanks for joining us today, and hope to have you in the program.
Thank you very much.
All right, James, I think we're good.
Fantastic.
I will say thank you to everyone for joining us today. And I will speak to the PPS practitioners tonight at 7 p.m.
Right. Thanks, everybody. And we'll have another call like this next month. So I hope we will all talk to you all in the new year.
Take care.